Growing businesses and finance professionals, you need Bill Spend and Expense, the free-to-use spend management software. It's powered by the Bill Divvy Corporate Card, which helps growing companies scale with credit lines of $500 to $15 million, automated expense reports, and as many virtual cards as you need. For a limited time, get $500 when you get started with Bill Spend and Expense. Request a demo at bill.com/get500. Terms and conditions apply. Advertised credit ranges are not guaranteed and are determined at approval. Card issued by Cross River Bank, member FDIC.
Unlock a new era in podcasting with Unfiltered Studios. Ready to break free from the ordinary? Dive into a world where authenticity meets innovation. Our network isn't just about podcasts. It's a revolution. From nostalgia to movies, sports to self-improvement, find your favorite podcast in an array of diverse shows. Only at Unfiltered Studios. Join the movement. Subscribe to Unfiltered Studios today and join the podcasting revolution. Unfiltered Studios, where every voice finds its place. Visit unfpod.com today to find your favorite show.
Unfiltered Studios will help you press record.
Hello, movie lovers, and welcome to the show. With me, I have my good friend Kip from the Unfiltered Studios, and also for the Stupid History Minute, and also part of Unfiltered Sports. Go on ahead, grab your favorite beverage of choice, whatever it may be. Also, too, go on ahead, get Mike Larry's car. Pretend that you're going undercover, just like Martin Lawrence and him did. So with further ado, let's go on ahead. Let's get on with the show. I'm excited to talk about the Bad Boys. And hey, Kip, how's it going with you tonight?
Good, man. How are you?
You know, fantastic. It's always good to gather around fellow movie lovers to talk about a movie. And I remember when I asked you, I said, "How do you want to do Bad Boys?" You're like, "Hell yeah, I'm in. We're going to do this."
Hell yeah. First off, thank you for having me. Second off, that intro is impressive.
Thank you so much. I'm glad that you liked it.
Yeah. It's way better than ours.
I don't know. I like yours too, though. You know, yeah. I'm not going to bang on, how you guys down or anything. I think it's good.
it's all good. I was excited to talk about this movie. Like I said, I got a lot of history with this movie. I don't know that there's a movie out there not named Star Wars that I've seen more.
To be honest with you, I remember in 1995, I was just 10 years old seeing this in the movie theater with my mom because she always brought me to every single movie that I wanted to go to and made her suffer through every single movie that I wanted to go to. But, it was 9 o'clock showing on a Friday night. And I was a diehard Will Smith fan. I loved him in, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. You also had Martin Lawrence, who was in this too, who also had a black comedy as well with the show Martin. So it was actually a good combo to see both of them on screen and wondering how the chemistry is going to jive off.
You know, when I was in 95, I was 20. And the reason I wanted to see it is because but many of your listeners may not know that I'm a stand-up comedian, and so I loved Martin Lawrence. I studied him, and if you look closely at the credits, he's actually the first credited in the first movie, but the rest of the second and third movie are Will Smith has the first credit, but I went because I loved Martin Lawrence. Of course, I knew Will Smith from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, the 80s and 90s rapper that he was, but my draw was Martin Lawrence, and quickly loved the two of those guys together. I don't know if there's a better action comedy duo than those guys.
Same here. I think the chemistry works between them. You can actually tell that they were buddy cops. This is hands down probably the best buddy cop movie aside from Lethal Weapon and probably 48 Hours.
Lethal Weapon in 48 Hours, that's what I was going to say, too. The charisma, but they're on par with each other. Yeah. You know, but I think, in my opinion, I think Bad Boys is funnier, in my opinion.
I think Bad Boys is way funnier. Even in the Lethal Weapon movies, don't get me wrong, I like some of the stuff that they have in there, but I'm not on the... Here's the thing, I'm always dying laughing at this movie every single time it comes on, every single time. As a matter of fact, I own all three of them on Blu-ray for Bad Boys.
Right.
So this is hands down one of my favorite franchises.
You know, if you think about it, though, with Lethal Weapon and 48 Hours, those are kind of very very, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, very finely, there's a kind of baby boomer age movies to where, you know, this was the Generation X movie. You know, this, you know, it had the humor. I think I like it better because I got the humor. It was my, you know, they spoke my language, I guess.
It was more directed towards people in the 90s era versus the 80s.
Right.
Stuff. This was like our Lethal Weapon.
Kind of. Not to say that I don't like Lethal Weapon or 48 Hours. Those are great movies, you know.
Right, exactly.
You made me want to go watch Lethal Weapon right now.
I love the Lethal Weapon.
Oh, man, they're great. But this one, just the reason that I think it means so much, you know, to me is because it was almost kind of made for us.
Exactly. You know? My question is for you. As a young 20-year-old kid seeing this for the first time, what would you say your nostalgic rating would be?
Off the charts. Yeah, off the charts. There's no. The first scene grabbed me. The very first scene grabbed me. I could probably recite the entire scene for you. It was, as somebody who writes comedy, it was perfect. You needed every bit of it. I don't know how many times that I've said, you know, Wesley Snipes, Passenger 57, hand me a bleeping, well, you know, handy wipe. And I think from the first scene, there are, and the reason I say off the charts is because there are sayings that I use every day in my daily life that come from that movie. I'll give you an example. One of them is, I know what I said because I was standing there when I said it. That's a Captain Howard direct quote. You know, and there's just many things that remind me of that time, and such, you know, such a fun time in my life. Not that now isn't, but I wasn't spending weeks in the hospital back then. But it just, for a nostalgia rating, off the charts for me.
Okay, for a nostalgia rating for me, I'm gonna have to go at least, I'm gonna go a 7.5 out of 10, because of the fact that I was young. I was young at the time. I was 10 years old, seeing this movie for the first time in the movie theater, like I mentioned before. I was hyped up because of Will Smith, because I knew him from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I didn't really know Martin Lawrence that much until I saw the reruns of Martin in the 90s and stuff like that on USA. That's whenever I started getting into more of his comedy stuff like that and started really liking the vibe that I got from him. Same thing whenever it came down to Bad Boys as well. I got to understand his humor a lot too. So I was actually a Martin Lawrence fan coming out of the movie as well. So yeah, I would have to go a 7.5 out of 10. This is actually Michael Bay's directorial debut too.
Right.
So this is what set Michael Bay on the map of doing Transformers, doing all these other movies. And also The Rock, of course, with Nicolas Cage.
It's a good one to start. If I remember correctly, he had some problems with the original script and with the screenplay, and talked with Martin Lawrence and Will Smith about changing that. They actually, I had said earlier about the first scene, that was actually shot as a reshoot.
Wow, I didn't know that.
It was shot after the movie was finished because they wanted to introduce the characters in a comedic way and not a action cop way.
I'm glad they did that, in a sense, to actually get the vibe of the movie and what they're going for.
Sure.
Being introduced in the very first 5 minutes of the film and trying to say, hey, look, this is the first time that these two are actually on screen together. We want you to see the chemistry that we built up before getting into the actual movie itself. So yeah, I could definitely see why they would do that.
And I'm really glad they did, like you said. Really glad they did.
There's also one other fun fact that I want to mention is when Mike throws the ether out of the car and makes it explode, a cable can be seen attached to the roof.
That's when they're running out of road. All the road in Miami and you run out of it.
Right.
Another great line.
But this is also a financial success, though. This actually had a $19 million budget. It ended up opening at $141,407,024.
And to put that into perspective, in 1995, that's a lot.
That really is a lot. If you think about it in today's terms, it would be like a $250 million budget and them hoping that they could actually make a make over 200.
Right. But with those guys, you know, today being, I mean, who's the equivalent? I mean, they weren't as big as they are now, you know, Will Smith and Martin Lawrence. Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, it'd be, you know, tough to see who the equivalent was that, because you could argue that not really Martin Lawrence, because he had been in movies, he'd been on Def Comedy Jam, he was a stand-up comedian, he had Martin, but you could argue that this movie kind of put Will Smith on the map.
Most definitely, because after this you have Independence Day, you have all these other films that Will is now doing because of that.
A great movie called Enemy of the State.
Yes, that was actually one of my other favorite ones that Will had done.
Yeah, that's a great movie.
But yeah, with the nostalgia rating out of the way, with two good buddy cops now talking about Bad Boys, let's go on ahead. Let's get on to it with dissecting this scene by scene. So welcome to the show. We dive into the best action cinema, one explosive film at a time. Your host and resident action movie aficionado. And today we're turning the heat with one most buddy cop movies of all time, Bad Boys. And we're talking about the 1995 blockbuster that Will Smith and Martin Lawrence on the action movie. From the high-octane car chases to the unforgettable one-liners, Bad Boys is a film that's as fun as Forensic. So yeah, directed by Michael Bay and produced by Don Simpson and Jerry Bruckheimer, Bad Boys is more than just a movie. It's full-throttle ride through the streets of Miami, packed with action, humor, and a whole lot of heart. So without further ado, let's go on ahead. Let's dissect this thing. So, opening scene. We actually talked about this a little bit, about the opening scene, Kip. I love this opening scene. So you have Marcus Barnett, played by Martin Lawrence, and Mike Lowry, played by Will Smith, our best friends and detective in the narcotics division of the Miami Police Department. One night, 100 million of mafia seized heroin is stolen from his secure police vault. This is a major blow for DeMarcus and Mike because it was the biggest drug bust of their career. Internal Fears, led by Captain Allison Sinclair, suspects that it was an inside job with the corrupted police. Warns the rest of the department that if they do not recover the drugs in 72 hours, the narcotics division will be shut down. But before that, we actually have them two in the car. Martin Lawrence is eating a hamburger. Will is driving his Porsche. And Martin winds up dropping some pickles, some onions, and stuff like that on his seat. He goes, oh, shit, I'm sorry, dude. I'm sorry. I didn't. What the fuck are you talking about? You're sorry. This is why I don't take you anywhere, because you don't care about other people's stuff or anything. So he goes, all this is, and then I like how Martin Lawrence just Max talking back. He goes, all this is like a dick with four wheels. That's all it is. I just have to
squeeze the balls, just dragging the fuck along.
But yeah, like you mentioned, I love the fact that they actually built up the chemistry at the very start of this film. We get the vibe of it, and then you don't expect this. This kind of reminds me of Grand Theft Auto. With the way that the scene is being played out, where you had that wide angle shot of this other car pulling up in front of them when they pull over and they're talking shit to each other. And, you know, these other guys come out. He goes, what are you going to, he goes, I want the car. Give me your money. And, you know, and he goes, you see, this is all your fucking fault. This is all your fault right here. This is why we're being held at gunpoint right now. And they get out of the car, and then I'll let you break down that, the rest of the scene.
Well, the scene really sets up the movie. Number one, they're arguing over him eating in the car and not respecting other people's property, and then you know when you see the other car pull up and a woman walks across, and that gets Mike Lowry's attention. So that sets up the dude's kind of a player. He's kind of like a different girl every night kind of guy. You don't know that yet, but, you know, it's called foreshadowing, and great directors know how to do it well. You know, and then they get carjacked, and, you know, right now you're jacking a couple of cops. Okay, now we know that they're cops. Well, if you didn't know that going in, you're an idiot. Anyhow, so then you kind of see their shtick to where every time they get in trouble, they start arguing with one another. Every time, and people get so uncomfortable, they don't know how to handle it. And they wind up, you know, getting out of it. You know, one of my Not to use too much profanity, but one of my favorite lines is when Martin Lawrence turns over the car, when they're getting carjacked, and Martin Lawrence turns over the car. He's like, why do I always got to get the big, thick motherfuckers, you know? And he's like, damn, you a Popeye chicken-eating motherfucker. What you weighing, about 350? You know, and I mean, just the back and forth there. And then, you know, when Will Smith said, you want something, you know, come and get it. And then they throw and draw their guns and all this. And one of the greatest lines in the movie, you know, Wesley Snipes, passenger 57. Now hand me a motherfucking handy wipe. That's a great line. And then, when it just cuts into, you know, bam, Bad Boys. And that's what you're in for.
The fact that they don't show us a title. It gives us like 10, 15 minutes of setup before showing us the credits, which I thought was fantastic. And, you know, I like how Martin Lawrence takes down the big, huge guy and just pistol whips him in the throat and then makes him nail down to the point where he actually ends up kneeing him in the face. And that's when he says that quote by Wesley Snipes, passenger 57. But yeah.
There are great opening scenes to movies, but you know, ones that you don't think, because I don't think anybody thought this was going to be a blockbuster, you know, and now with the fourth iteration coming out, I know a lot of people who can't wait for it.
I'm excited for it.
Me too. I thought the third one was lackluster, but I'm really excited for the fourth one. But anyhow, back to the first one. I don't think you could see a movie in this genre that has a better opening.
No, definitely not. And, you know, I like how they go in through the police station and they go through the van. I like the camera of them going through the vent of the van and dropping down and stealing the heroin and stuff. That's something that I really have to say was really cool, because I never seen a shot like that in the 90s, having that kind of camera angle. Michael Bay at that time was ahead of its time, giving us certain angles like that. And I was fanboying over the fact that I got to see something like that happening and how they managed to do a heist job within the police station itself. And you don't know it's a police station until like later on, whenever you realize, oh, they actually robbed the police station.
I think also the way that they did it by killing a decoy empties the station. But they don't kill a real cop because they know they have the whole force on their ass. That's a direct quote, Mike Lowry. But they, I think that the way that they did it also kind of leads into the authenticity of the heist, you know? And
definitely.
And you get a little backstory that this was, like you were saying in the opening, that this was their career bust. You know, it's like $100 million from some guy named Carrera.
Right. And I like how we have a little bit of a backstory of how good these cops are and how much they care about their job, because even Mark Lurie is like, man, we ended up busting this guy, Chino, and everything, and now we're having to try and get this back into our possession before the DEA even comes up on it. And then you also have, I love the captain. The captain is hands down one of my favorite characters on here. I loved him in The Sopranos. I loved him in this. This is actually one of my favorite actors.
I think throughout, if you look throughout the entire franchise, I think the captain is probably my favorite character. Yeah, probably. He's certainly one of the most quotable, you know, but I think he's probably my favorite character. Just how he changes, but he doesn't change. I could have done, you know, with that, not to get too far away from this, but I could have done without the whole Woosaw stuff in the second one.
Right.
But you know, as a captain, I thought that he was so cliche, it was perfect.
Perfect. Like it has like an 80s kind of vibe to it, where the police captain's always going to be pissed off his police officers and stuff like that. And you know, at the end of the day, that he knows that he can rely on them, despite the fact that they end up destroying half a city block sometimes or shooting up streets. He knows that they can depend on him at the end of the day.
What it kind of reminded me of, have you ever seen a movie? I know the answer to this. You've seen this movie, but you remember the movie Last Action Hero?
Oh, I love that movie. I actually have that on my steelbook.
Okay, yeah. So do I. Another great quotable movie, but you remember the captain there, and he was just so cliche, but that's kind of what it reminds me, and Schwarzenegger is just like, shut up, stop yelling, you know? it's almost what he reminds me of, but the whoever wrote this movie, you know, and I don't know, I know they ad-libbed the beginning, and I know the in the second movie they ad-libbed the Reggie scene. But whoever wrote this movie wrote Captain Howard very well. You know,
they
because he's got some of the, you know, some of the greatest lines. And him and Mike have some of the Will Smith character have some of the best back and forths with Martin Lawrence just kind of interjecting in there, you know. And I mean, it was just perfect. I don't know if they rehearsed that, but they had instant chemistry between the three of them.
I agree with you on that. I definitely do. My wife says I definitely didn't think that they would have a fourth movie. I kind of did because of the fact the way they ended it with Will Smith's son and stuff like that. It had like a Fast and the Furious kind of vibe if you think about it. It felt like Fast and the Furious a little bit because of the way that the two directors directed that one. But it also ended up having, budget was between $50 million and $100 million. While the previous movies had a budget of $90 million, the franchise has historically done well at the box office. So I kind of figured they would actually.
They definitely left it open for a fourth movie. I don't think that the people who are now in charge of the Bad Boys franchise thought that Will Smith was going to slap Chris Rock at the Oscars.
Right.
You know, I don't think that they thought that that was going to happen. I don't think they thought that the writers and actors strike was going to happen either. You know,
right.
Because I don't know if you saw, you know, just a month or two ago, they were filming in Miami and somebody asked Will Smith, hey, you were filming, and now the movie's coming out. It was like those were reshoots. They filmed the majority of the movie before the strike.
Right. I'm glad that they actually got most of the majority finished. And I remember that. I remember when it was in post-production on production and they managed to film about half of it. So therefore, right. They didn't have to worry about the strikes as much, and they can just come back to it whenever they got them strikes. So I'm actually happy that we are getting that in August. I know The Crow comes out in August.
Oh, no. Bad Boys is June 7th.
Yep, June, because The Crow and that was going to open up at the same day. So therefore, The Crow had to move over to August, because I was like, yeah, that needs to be moved, because Bad Boys is a major franchise. It makes more sense for that to move.
And then, of course, in July, we get Deadpool.
Yes, I cannot wait.
Me neither.
But yeah, I thought that the opening sequence of them robbing the police station still holds up. I thought it was really good, very well executed. Having the 72 hours with an narcotics division will be having that kind of time limit within the movie. I thought that was really good because it ends up, for me, having a little bit of a suspense thing of like, oh my God, are these guys going to be able to hold up the 72 hours before they're shut down? So I like that whole entire aspect.
Yeah, great line in that scene is, you know, Captain Howard, and when he says for to check out the ventilation system, you know, Vargas Ruiz, you go do that now. And he pulls Mike and Marcus over. And he's like, this could definitely be an inside job. Don't rule it out. Way I see it, we got 72 hours before the DEA comes in here and shuts us down, and we're the bad guys. Just do what you do, only faster.
And then at that point, that's when they go over to Michael Imperioli's character.
Yeah. And JoJo.
JoJo. What's going on, JoJo?
JoJo the tire man.
Hey, I just sell rubber. I just sell rubber, man. I don't know nothing, man. I don't know anything about no heroin or anything. Oh, no? You don't know anything about a little cocaine, a little heroin or anything? No. I just sell rubber. And so,
you know something, Joe? Tell him something, Joe!
Whoa! And you know, that Joe's like, look, man, I don't know nothing. I'm out of that business. And so at first, Mike and them are believing it. Like, okay, right. Fine. You don't know nothing. We're not going to push nothing on you. Basically, he's just an informant now in case they ever need somebody on the streets or anything. So they let him go back to doing his tire business. And then we get Mike, who winds up asking Max to look for people who are newly rich and therefore suspects. She gets herself and her best friend, Julie Maud, who's played by Tia Leoni, hired as an escort by Eddie Dominguez, a crooked former cop and part of the coup, his boss, French drug kingpin, Fauché.
Yeah.
And this guy, I'll be honest with you, they picked the perfect person to play someone like that.
Yeah, I believe it's you're talking about the guy who plays Fauché.
Yeah, Fauché.
Tetchy Cairo is his name, right?
Yeah.
The actor. He also was in the movie The Patriot. But great guy to play kind of the big baddie. I thought they had a good guy to play Eddie Dominguez too, just because you know rat ex cop, kind of guy, dirtbag. I thought that they, played that way. And arguably, you mentioned Miss Tia Leone. This movie introduced her.
Yep, this was actually her first acting job, and then I remember seeing her in that Nicolas Cage movie that I reviewed for Christmas. It was The Family Man. I watched that.
Right.
I reviewed that one with Zoe from the Backlog Cinema podcast, and I love that movie. And to see her in this, she's probably one of my first crushes at 95 because of how hot she looked. I'm gonna be honest. I thought they did a very good job at basically Tia's like, I don't know about this, or anything like that. Mexican, I think this is a bad idea. She goes, just relax, it's fine. And they're in the Capone suite, and he's over there sniffing heroin and having a party. And she's like, look, I think we should just go. No, we need to take this a little bit further. And I definitely like, then we have that introduction into the big bad. And, at first you're thinking, okay, well, they're just going to let these two escorts go. But then the henchman is actually incompetent.
Right.
Because he has heroin out there that was from the police station, which is evidence enough to bust them, and also to be able to let Maxime report in with Mike. And this movie would have been over in like 20 or 30 minutes because of the fact if they didn't have killed it off.
Yeah, you never want to leave witnesses. That's like I hate to go back to Last Action Hero, but you got movie rules. And one of the movie rules is never leave witnesses, because that would make, that would make them, like you said, the movie 20 minutes long. Fauché comes in. He says, I was looking for my two keys of coke, and now I know where they are, you treat yourself well, Eddie, and just showing how much of a dirtbag he was, how much of a calculating guy that Fauché is. That's one thing. They haven't had a good better bad guy than him. The first bad guy is always the best. I mean, if you look at, like, the Avengers, Loki is the best bad guy. The best bad guy is always the first bad guy. So, I think, with there, but, yeah, Taya Leone coming in, oh, yeah, Party at the Biltmore, that's going to be great, I think it set up her character, well, to be argumentative, which she is throughout the entire movie.
Right, and she's also someone that will get people killed. because of what she does. We'll get into that a little later, but
sure.
I definitely love the fact that she's upstairs and then she sees Maxine by herself and see the whole entire thing go down where the guy winds up wasting her on the floor, taking a pillow, blasting her, and then blasting the henchman, and that's it. That's the end of it. And he dies, she dies. Leone's character vibe, and then she winds up jumping into a swimming pool after the chase. And what did you think of the stunts though when it came down to Tia Leone with Julie just jumping out the window and jumping into the pool on top of the roof and all that stuff?
I think there's a couple of things. I think it's 1995 technology, and so I think you could tell that it's not her, a couple of times. But I thought, I'm not going to overuse the word cliche here, but when you look out of a window, and Nate, can you name another 90s movie that somebody jumps out of a window into a pool?
I can. True Lies.
Okay, True Lies. I can. Lethal Weapon 2.
Yep.
It's kind of like a 90s rite of passage, if you will, that we're going to jump out, and there's a pool there, so it's all good. It doesn't matter how high we're going to jump from, but there's a pool, we're fine. You know,
right, exactly.
It might be 4 feet deep, you know, and who knows if I'm going in head first or whatnot, but it's a, you know, it's a pool.
Water won't see.
Water, it's fine, you know. It's going to be all good. You know, I'm going to come up. And another thing that bugs me about that scene is that when she comes up, it's like she's been underwater for like 30 minutes. She comes up with this big breath like that. And I'm like, dude, you were in there for like 10 seconds. You hit the water, you come up. You can't be out of breath. You know,
it's not like you were on Titanic with Jack and you're doing that and you're watching the ship sink and you're on the ship with them and you're having to breathe underwater. Well,
right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, and that's a whole nother story about flotation devices and doors. That's a whole nother story. But you know, it's you know, the believability. But it's a movie. You know, it's there.
Exactly.
Was that scene entertaining? It absolutely was entertaining. You know, with the shots with her running through the hallway and them shooting at her. You know, and finally finding, you know, the jumping off the roof into the pool. I thought the stunts were okay. I mean, they're 1995. I don't think Tom Cruise would put him in Mission Impossible, but
I don't think so either. But I'm glad it wasn't like a shaky cam like we get today either.
Right.
Because some people are like, okay, well, let's add shaky cam to it, add the suspense to it. But I'm glad Michael Bay at that time was like, you know what? I'm just going to let the scene be the scene and let it play out the way it needs to be played out and not add anything else to it, because that's the job of the actor to actually make it believable. Not up to me to be able to do something with my camera to make it that way.
And I'm glad Michael Bay doesn't add the J.J. Abrams patented, you know, flair to, you know, the flair scenes like in Star Trek and Looper. Michael Bay, really what you get to look for him is a bunch of explosions. And we get them.
Spinning camera angles.
Yeah. Spinning camera. That's actually a Bad Boys, you know, rite of path. Like, you gotta have it.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, that's the signature.
You gotta have it. Yeah. You gotta have it. If I'm quite certain the fourth one will have it. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure too. Even in the second one, it had it. And then the first one, it definitely had it too. Cool. But yeah, the madam who hired Julianne Max is disposed by Noah and who then knocks out Mike as he investigates Max's death. Because at this time, Mike is over there trying to investigate something that happened. And he gets knocked out because he ends up finding out that the madam is actually dead.
Right.
And nobody knows where Mike is either.
He said he got this. He was going to go check out. Her name was Lois Fields. And he was going to go check her out. And I guess Noah beat him to it. And wound up, you know, knocking him out. But the scene that comes next was probably one of my favorite scenes.
Oh yeah. Although she has not met Mike because of Maxine's relationship with Julie, Will only trust and deal with Mike. However, he is followed by the lead on the madam when she contacts the police about the murders, threatening to run if she does not speak to Mike. Captain Conrad Howard forces Marcus to impersonate Mike, get Julie to cooperate. And I love this scene because he's on the phone with his wife and he's still trying to get some from his wife. And just, baby, you had the red ones with the straps and everything? He goes, but you said you would wait. But you said the quality. Well, you're not home. And then the phone rings. He goes, hold on 1 second. And then he goes, yeah, I need those files unlocked. The next thing you know, you see the captain come over there because they get a phone call. And I'll let you break that down.
So the captain comes over there and says, where's Lowry? And he said, you went to go follow up on this Lois Fields lead. And he's like, Lois Fields, the madam? And the phone rings. Captain Howard picks it up. This is Mike Lowry's desk. Said, yeah, can I speak to Detective Mike Lowry, please? And he's like, Mike Lowry's not here. I have another detective here. And he's like, no, I just saw, you know, a murder, and I will only talk to Detective Mike Lowry. You wouldn't be having to talk about the murder at the Biltmore Hotel tonight, will you? Yes, and I'll only talk to Mike Lowry. I'm going to blow it down. Hey, Mike. Nah, he's coming right now. Yeah, Mike, your phone call. Like,
and then there's Bob. And then, of course, this is actually how Marcus looks. plug it off. And he goes, and then he's going to pretend to be Mike. I can't be Mike. I know. He goes, yeah, this is Mike. Why are we?
I'm Mike Lowry. Yeah, that's not how he talks. He sounds sexy or something. Hello.
And you know what? This is actually like direct. Like he's a director. He goes, look, that's not sexy enough. You gotta sound like him. You don't sound sexy at all. Mike Lowry.
Yeah, and he's like, hey, man, calm down, Mike to the rescue. Yeah, and Captain Howard's like, get to this address right now. No, man, get Mike down in here. Get to this address. You won't see your wife for a month.
And then I just thought that scene was hilarious. I thought the chemistry between him and Marcus is really good because now you get to see a one-on-one thing between them to see if there's actually any chemistry between the captain and Marcus. And it's really good. I really thought it was well executed.
Yeah, I thought whenever they're away from each other, you know, they're both very talented. So whenever they're away from each other, they have to command the scene. But Joe Pantoliano, he is a seasoned actor as well, you know. So he kind of knows as an actor, you kind of got to know. I don't want to say know your place, you know, but he knows he's not the draw in that, you know, scene. So I thought, again, another form of Captain Howard being so well written, you know, and I could sit here for 3 hours and bore you with Captain Howard scenes because they're probably outside of Star Wars, they're probably my favorite in cinema, period.
You know what? I watched it just for, I'm to think of it, like, even when I watched the second and third one, I'm wondering what the captain is doing in every single movie. Is this my draw to the captain?
Yeah, I mean,
you know, it's because I always want to know what Mike and Marcus are going to do to piss him.
So, I know we're talking about the original. I got to bring this up because we're talking about Captain Howard. In the second one, when he sits there, he's like, I hate you guys. Okay, do you guys get up in the morning and say, hello, Marcus. Hello, Mike. How are you doing? Now, how are we going to fuck up the captain's life today? You know, it just, that man strikes me funny. He didn't really strike me funny in The Sopranos, which I've watched numerous times. He was also in The Matrix.
Yep.
You know, he was also in The Matrix. He's been in a ton of stuff. But most notably Sopranos and the Bad Boys franchise. But, I mean, again, I want to meet the man who wrote his lines, you know.
Me too, because his lines are perfect.
Oh, man, they're great. I mean, he is, I will go so far as to say, as captains go in a buddy cop movie, he's the best by far. Not even a contest. Anyhow.
But yeah, then Marcus goes over to Julie's apartment. He goes, yeah, this is Mike Lowry. So he goes, okay, show me some ID. So he shows her the ID through the peephole, and then she lets him in. Next thing you know, she takes a Louis Slugger bat and just about to beat the hell out of him. Just easy, lady, easy. It's me, it's Mike. I'm here to help you. We're going to put you in protective custody. And everything, just, you don't look like Mike. Well, I wasn't expecting to walk into Yankee Stadium either.
Right.
You know. But
you,
I like...
You want to go at this alone? Fine. Oh, the bad guys probably know you where you live, which means they're on their way. Good luck.
And then she winds up saying, well, I need to stay at your place. He goes, hell no, you're not going to stay at my place.
My place. Mike Lowry's place. Oh, yeah. You're right. We go to Mike Lowry's place.
My place is a shade. Yeah, okay. We'll go to Mike Lowry's place. Yeah.
Which introduces probably of this movie, outside of Will Smith and Martin Lawrence, my second favorite character in Chet, the doorman.
Yep. The doorman
Chet,
is my favorite.
The doorman is the man, dude. Chet is the man.
I really love his character. He's actually hands down one of my favorite characters. He also played in, I want to say he played in Becker, which is also a Ted Danson sitcom.
Right.
And I liked him in that too, as well. But yeah, so after that happens, in order to continue the description, Marcus and Mike switch lives. Marcus tells his family he is going to Cleveland for another drug case. leaving Mike to stay with them. Marcus then moves into Mike's apartment with Julie and her dogs. In Julie's presence, Marcus poses as Mike, while Mike poses as Marcus. And I like how he
walks. Do you remember the name of the dogs?
I remember one of them. What? I can't remember.
It was Luke and Dookie.
Yeah, Luke and Dookie.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Luke and Dookie.
And he doesn't even know. Here's the thing. Marcus doesn't even know what Mike's place even looks like. A light switch. Because, man, I'm always doing decorating around here and everything. I'm always losing my shit. I'm always losing my light switches. I don't know where anything is. All of a sudden, you see Julie. She puts on the light switch. Oh, good. You found the light
switch. always moving my switches.
Always moving my switch. And then he winds up saying, look, I guess I'm T-Bones. I'm always losing my shit. I don't know where my fridge is. It's right over here. Get some T-Bone steaks for you and Dookie, and everything's going to be okay. We're going to take care of you. You're here with Mike Lowry. From McLurry's house.
My favorite part of that whole thing, before they get upstairs, when he tells her to stay in the car, you know, when they're like running away, and she's like, what's this, a station wagon? Oh my God, you got a baby seat in the back. You have a baby seat in the back. So they get to Lowry's place, and he has to go in and talk to Chet. And Chet's like, yeah, who's the girl? How's your wife? Yeah. And so he gets in there, that he's deputized. And anyhow, he gets up there. They go through the scene you just talked about with, you know, and when he comes back down, Chet goes, oh, one of those guys, huh?
Yeah. And I like how Marcus is over there looking at Julie. He goes, come on. I like that. Yeah. Because, look, I can be a cop. You know, I went through the police academy and everything. Look, if you want me to, I can have a little stool right here outside where Mike's apartment is, and I can read the newspaper, just like how they do in the movies.
Yeah, do that from here. Yeah, can you do that from here? Yeah, you my deputy. Do that from here. I can do that from here. Yeah. As Tia Leone, or Julie Mott's, you know, the character's name, calls him earlier, Chet the mini-moron doorman. You know, and they're... I know we're going to get to it, but there's another line involving Chet later that is probably my favorite line out of the movie. And it, very, you know, I look at jokes, I write jokes, I listen to jokes all the time. Usually what makes me lose it is something very simple and very stupid. And it's that line to this day. I don't know how many times me and my friend Brad, who watched this when we were in Gainesville, Florida, going to school, how many times we paused the VHS from Blockbuster to that part, that part. We'll get to it in a second. But it is very, talk about nostalgia. You know, it reminds me of a lot that went on, you know, almost 30 years ago.
It's hard to believe that this is actually close to 30 years. The very first Bad Boys.
Yeah.
But I also like how the captain goes, look, you're Marcus, you're him, he's you. Okay, that's it. And, you know, I like how they have to actually, Marcus has to make up the lie that he's going over to Cleveland to go out of town. And now Mike is over there with the wife.
So the scene where Captain Howard tells him, you know, hey, you be Marcus. Or you be Mike, if you have to be Mike, whatever, you be you, but not around her, you know, and all that where he's shooting the basketballs.
Right.
Is probably one of the best scene with the three of them until the second one. But yeah, the back and forth with Will Smith, Martin Lawrence coming up the escalator before that meeting. To where he's like, I want to know who whooped your ass. I want to know who whooped Shaft's ass. You know, and just creating that dynamic between the two of them that they, you know, they're great friends, they're partners, they know each other a long time, but they are just like everybody. They give each other shit, you know, and that creating that dynamic, because if that's not there, then... and that goes to Michael Bay, the director. If that's not there, then it doesn't work down the line.
Exactly. And I just love it. We talked about the chemistry over and over again.
Sure.
It's just perfect. And, you know, as the investigation proceeds, with Mike and Marcus calling in on their old informants, including JoJo, a former chemist and drug convict who now works at the tire shop. Later, Julie identifies Noah while looking through the mugshots. The two cops then head off to Club Hell, one of the known hangouts. And we'll get into Club Hell in a minute, but I like how now JoJo knows that they know something's up, because the first time they just let him go. He goes, "Hey, JoJo, what you up to, man?" Next thing you know, he just starts running. And then, "Oh, no, no, JoJo, no." I'm like, how Mark is there when that. And then, but you also see another scene before that, though, is where now you have Marcus, a.k.a. Mike, who goes over to his own apartment and sees them. And he goes, "Oh, look, she's got dogs. Isn't that cute?"
Yeah, you let him ride all of the furniture, you know?
"Oh, yeah. Is that a little shit stain over there? What's going on over here? Oh, that's just Dookie. He crapped all over the floor." "Oh, did he? Yeah, I was going to ask Mike if I can go on ahead and get that taken care of. But he said, no, don't worry about it. Oh, look at him. He's just a stand-up guy."
That's also when somebody comes through the door. And Marcus is like, "Get out of here, lady," like that. And he goes back to Will Smith. He's like, "Who was that?" He's like, "That was a vet stalking me." And Will Smith's like, "A vet is a masseuse. Oh, yeah. She massages shit."
And then, because, he was also half naked. I threw a vet out half naked.
She was naked? Titties hanging out a little bit. Yeah, you threw a vet out naked? Yeah, is there a TLA?
Take control of your growing company's finances with Bill Spend and Expense, the free-to-use spend management software powered by the Bill Divvy Corporate Card. With credit lines from $50,000 to $5 million, Bill Spend and Expense is here to help you thrive. Say goodbye to manual expense reports and juggling multiple cards, and say hello to saving time and eliminating wasteful spend. Try Bill Spend and Expense today at bill.com/promo500 and get $500. Terms and conditions apply. Advertised credit ranges are not guaranteed and are determined at approval. Card issued by Cross River Bank. Member FDIC.
So, is there any more half-naked women coming around here? You know? Yeah, what a great back and forth.
Right, because that's why you don't respect people's shit. You don't respect anything.
I've been telling you that for years. Yeah, and that's a common theme, too. You know, that's a common theme too. But when they interrogate JoJo with guns to his head, you know, and then when I guess Mike Lowry had enough of waiting, you know, with guns to his head in that exchange, they find out that that there's another chemist that has a rich mom and daddy that live out in Coconut Grove. I'm sure you're gonna go through that scene,
right? Well, I'll let you break that one down too.
So they go out to Coconut Grove and they go to this house that they were led to, and they go in. Somebody's dead, and you know, if you've never seen the movie, spoiler alert: Marcus and Mike Lowry are narcotics cops. But it's a funny thing that when you deal in the world of drugs, sooner or later, somebody's going to turn up dead. Yeah, sooner or later. So they go into this house, and they knock on the door, and nobody answers, but the door's open. And so they decide to say that they're the next-door neighbors.
The neighbors.
Right, and they Martin Lawrence tells Will Smith, and they're kind of in a fluent neighborhood, tells Will Smith he's got too much bass in his voice, that he needs to sound a little bit more, you know, quote unquote white, and says, "We were wondering if we could borrow some brown sugar."
Sugar. And then, as that scene's being played out, you already know this is not good. No one answering the door. The door's already open.
Right.
Then you see the library. Study. The guy's laid out on the desk and they're looking for clues. Mike winds up moving the body a little bit.
Just, right.
Shut that shit up. Just, man, you always do this when you see dead bodies around.
My favorite line out of that scene is when he's moving the body and the leg comes in. He's like, man, watch where you swing at a dead leg. I love that. He's like, dead bodies, dead ends. And he starts that. He's going to try to throw up and he's leaving. He's like, man, how about we go get some burritos? You know, just another thing of them giving each other shit. Yeah.
Because, oh, shit, is that flies?
Maggots.
And because, man, you always act like this when you see dead bodies and everything. Quit acting like you've never seen a dead body before. And then after that happens, we actually see, you know, Leonie is over there. Julie is looking through mugshots and things like that. And she identifies one of the people. And at that point, they decide, okay, well, we're going to go down to Club Hell. And the way Club Hell looks, it looks like something out of a Marvel comic book.
It really does.
It looks like a place that bad guys would go to.
Sure.
Just it looks like an upside down cross, the way that the hell looks and everything. This looks like a place that you don't want to be at. And,
I mean, goth club at its best, you know. But it's very, I don't know how much time you've ever spent in Miami. It is very Miami.
Yeah. I've never been to Miami before. I've been to Orlando. I've been around that area and also to around parts of Florida. But yeah, it definitely has a Miami vibe.
It's definitely Miami. Yeah.
But yeah, at that point, eager to dish out revenge on Fauché for killing Max, the criminals spot them first after a brief fight between Marcus and Casper in a car chase, which ends with Noah getting killed by Mike. All three manage to escape the incident, caught by camera by a news helicopter. Okay, that's whenever they hop into the helicopter, winds up hopping into the back of the van, and they have the kerosene and all that in the back of the truck.
Yeah, the ether.
Yeah,
when they're when they're getting chased.
Yeah,
where are the cops? Why are they chasing us?
And she even said, "Well, why are we running? You're the cops. You're not supposed to be running."
Right.
And then
hey, we're running out of road, all the road to Miami, and you run out of it.
And then also too, another funny part too that happens is while Marcus is getting his ass kicked in the men's room, you have Mike over there watching a stripper.
Yeah.
And he's over there watching her foot. And then Marcus finally winds up slamming one dude's head into the toilet bowl. And I thought that action sequence was really cool. And then he gets thrown into the fish tank that they have. And
that was one of the concerns I had going into this movie, was that could Martin Lawrence pull off a fight scene? You know, could he? Because this guy, I mean, you know, if you've watched Martin, it's not necessarily the most the biggest guy, right? But could he pull off a fight scene? I mean, Will Smith's a big dude, you know, so you figured he could, you know. But you know, I thought that scene set the tone for Martin Lawrence, because it was funny. It was well choreographed. It kind of looked like he was getting the brunt of it, but then, you know, he walks away. Mike comes to the rescue when he sees what's going down. When he gets there, it's all over, and he's like, "Who hauled off and whoop your ass now?" You know, and just more to the dynamic of what they are, because, you know, and this is, again, foreshadowing, because it's, you know, when we get to the end of this movie, it's, kind of Marcus-centric.
Yes, very Marcus-centric, especially the way it ends on that note. But another thing, too, is we also forgot to mention the fact that Marcus goes back over to his wife's house when he's supposed to be going undercover, because they're looking at old high school pictures, too.
Yeah, yeah.
And just, no, Mike, put it back in. No, but we don't want Marcus to find. That's it. I had enough. I'm going home.
I can't get my quality time. Oh, but Mike can get quality time. Okay. Yeah.
And even Julie's over there saying, yeah, if I was Marcus, I wouldn't trust him. I wouldn't. They're probably over there making love right now. And next thing you know, they got into Marcus's head to go over there to spy on Mike.
Oh yeah. It just goes to show you, no matter how well you know somebody, you know, there's always that thought in the back of the head that a woman can't be trusted. I'm just kidding.
And your best friend can't be trusted.
Yeah. Now you're gonna get a bunch of don't DM Movie Lovers Unite. You got a problem with what I said? Matt Keb lives that stupid minute. That's fine.
I already had anime people come at me. So yeah, it's cool.
Really?
Yeah. For one piece.
I guess it's better than the flat earthers. I had like 6,000 of those guys come after me. But yeah. Anyhow, back to the movie. Great scene where they. Where they're over there, and then I don't know if we're to it yet or not, where the guys are watching, you know, his house, and he calls Vargas and Ruiz or whoever, and says, hey, come and get these guys.
Right, and then at that point, after all that happens, they go to Hell, and that's...
Yeah.
But I just thought it was funny, because now they're caught on camera through... they're now caught on camera through the news network. Hey, Mom, I thought you said that Dad was in Cleveland.
He only wishes he was in Cleveland. You know? And anyhow, so when they find that, who did they get the information from for the... yeah, it was from that guy from Club Hell. It was from from that guy, yeah. And so another great line when they're watching, I don't know if we're here yet, but when they're watching the people take the drugs in, and the guy come out, and he was like, I want swimming ducks in here. And Julie gets out of the car, and they're both looking at it, and it's like, hey, man, it can't hurt to take a peek. And Marcus's like, if they fire a damn bullet over here, it's going to hurt.
And after... Then also, too, at the club, they discover barrels of ether. We talked about the witch's status, the cut, and refine the heroin. So Mike and Marcus decide to visit JoJo again after an aggressive and convincing good cop act from Mike and Marcus. JoJo tells them the location of the chemist who is cutting the stolen drugs. After staking out his house, they follow him to where Fochette is hiding the drugs. So, yeah. Then they return over to Mike's apartment and Julie, where they confronted by Marcus's wife there, Teresa, who confirms Julie's suspicion that they have been impersonating each other. This causes Julie to storm off by Fochette, and his gang arrive at Mike's apartment and kidnap Julie. Because of this, Infernal Affairs assigns all members of the narcotics division, officially shutting them down. But Captain Howard delays the order. Give Mike and Marcus more time to solve the case.
Real quick. Okay, when they're in the apartment and they're getting ready to go before Teresa Burdett shows up. Okay, and it's just Mike and Marcus, let me back up just a second before they go to Club Hell. Okay, there's a conversation between Marcus and Julie. Right in Mike's apartment, right, and she thinks he's Mike, and says that hey, you know, me and my partner, we're going to Club Hell tonight. And he's like, she's like, what are you going to, you know, leave me here with Chet, the mini moron doorman? And Marcus goes, and this is my favorite line of the entire movie. Marcus goes, Chet is very good. I don't know why, I love that line. Just the way Martin Lawrence says it, you know, just. Chet is very good, and like if you're not paying attention, you'll blow right by it, you know.
Right,
and,
because at that moment, it's like he's becoming Mike Larry to the point where he's believing in himself, because he doesn't even know Chet that well, but he's supposed to be a great doorman.
Chet is very good. Yeah, man, we had to pause it. We were laughing so hard back in '95. You know, it came out on VHS. I bet you if I looked hard enough, I never returned it to Blockbuster. I probably still owe Blockbuster the $100 for late fee on that thing that I didn't pay. I think sooner or later you just own it. But It was just a great line. Anyhow, sorry, I mean,
I love that. I love that scene too.
Yeah, it was a great scene. So I think right now we're at the scene where Fouché and the guys figure out where Mike Lowry's apartment is.
Right, and then of course you have the confrontation with Teresa at that time, and she goes, Marcus, what did you say that you were going to be out of town in Cleveland and everything, and here you are with her. Just look, maybe I'm undercover. Let's talk about it somewhere else. And then at that point, then you have Julie who looks at Mike Lowry. He goes, like, look, if his wife can find him that easily,
yeah, better.
They already know that they're on their way.
Yeah, and when Teresa Burnett, played by Teresa Randall, yeah, says, you know what, I just hope that you and Mike and your little white girlfriend are very happy
together. Because, baby, I know what you're thinking. I know what you're thinking, that we're having an orgy over here, but we're not.
Yeah, you see me, I come out with a shirt off. You see Mike, he half butt naked. You know, ain't nothing like that going on over here.
It's perfectly normal. It's an everyday life, Mike and Marcus. It's fine.
Baby, I'm telling you, I'm being real. She's a material witness. Teresa just turns around, starts walking. You know, she's a witness.
Right. At that point, she's gone. She's done. She's done with the both of them. But also, too, I like how whenever Julie first sees Mike's pictures all over the place, he goes, oh, so is it normal to have your partner's pictures all over the place, all over your apartment? That was also another thing I forgot to mention.
Also, when they were looking through the pictures, you know, right, that same scene where they're looking through the pictures, and he makes himself a bologna sandwich, and she's got a problem with the bologna sandwich, and she's like, you know, it was an animal. It probably had a name. And Martin Lawrence's like, my bologna has a first name. You know, he's like, how about the pickle? Can I eat the pickle? You know?
Yeah, it has a lot of calories, but yeah, it has a lot of salt, but yeah, you can eat.
Yeah, I love that scene. Yeah, you know, there's a bunch of them like that.
But I thought the chase scene for this was really good.
Sure.
Too, where he's running through everything, where basically you have Mike running through a beauty salon, and he's trying to catch up with the henchmen, and he goes, by the way, your hair looks green. You keep up the awesome work. It looks fantastic.
Yeah.
And he winds up running out there, and then you see him running on top of cars. It's a typical action movie at that point. It's very... And then another thing I liked was whenever you see Marcus and him both laying on the ground trying to shoot at this car. And then, you know, when they get up and you have that spinning... Like you said, it's their signature.
It's iconic, yeah.
You have to have a spinning cam for that scene. And the dramatic... effect to it. I thought it was really good.
Yeah, I thought the chase scene, I personally didn't think it lasted long enough. I thought what was great, and looking back on it, and I know you do, but I'm a tough guy to watch a movie with, because I dissect them, because I'm a Star Wars fan, I'm used to it, and if I really like a movie, I mean, I can take like the perfect movie and like I can find something wrong with The Godfather, you know, I mean, but I didn't think it doesn't change its entertainment value, but like they did enter some cliche things that you have to have in a chase. When two people are chasing people, or when you're chasing somebody on foot, you have to throw things like the wheelchair basketball players that, you know, that slow them down. You know, they're running through stores. Apparently every store has a back door, you know, in Miami. You know, I know quite a few. I'm about 4 hours from Miami, and I know quite a few here that don't have back doors, you know. So, but apparently Mike Lowry got lucky. That one did, you know, and he was telling all the old women, hey, you look great. You know, running through the streets of South Beach, you know, and I thought it was perfect, perfect when they, at the end of the chase, when he's trying to shoot, they're shooting at the cab, when, you know, Mike Lowry takes Martin Lawrence and over, and he's like, don't ever say I was never there for you. You know, I thought right. that was a great line between the two, and then they stand up and get the panoramic shot, which, you know, is this the money shot of Michael Bay.
Right, and then like he goes, "I love you, man." Just man, you always get sentimental during a shootout.
Yes, I'm happy we survived. You know,
but yeah,
I've got a story about that line at the end when we get there.
Okay,
remind me. I got a story about that line.
So now we're back at the police station, yeah. And with the help of the hacker named Fletcher, yeah. Played by John Sally, they access Domingo's police database profile and learn that the police station secretary, Francine, played by Anna Thompson. And by the way, this is actually the third movie I've reviewed with Anna Thompson in it. Okay. The Crow, she played in The Crow. She played Darla. She also right. played in True Romance.
Okay.
So, and now this one. So those are the three movies that featured her in this movie that I'm reviewing.
Who did she play in True Romance?
She actually played a hooker at the very beginning, where basically Christian Slater is over there talking to her about Kung Fu movies.
Yeah.
And she's just pretty much just ignoring him. And so that's
she was, you know what? She was also in a movie called The Unforgiven with Clint Eastwood.
Okay. It's been a long time since I've seen that one. So I haven't. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. She was also in that movie. She was the one that got her face messed up. And yeah, she was in The Unforgiven. Unless I'm confusing my Westerns, I'm not a real big Western guy.
Not either.
That's not called Django Unchained. You know, I mean, Tarantino, I'll drop what I'm doing for him. But, you know, I'm pretty sure she was in The Unforgiven.
Okay. But yeah, every single time whenever they try to go up to her, she's like, "I'm sorry, I just can't unlock the file." And, you know, at first you're like, okay, you actually believe her. But going back and rewatching it, realize, okay, she's not playing good. She's not hiding anything. She's just, if you first watch it, you're like, okay, yeah, she just can't unlock it. But as you watch it again, you realize, okay, this woman's hiding something.
Yeah, I think also Francine was her name. Francine, yep. in the movie. But
played Dominguez's former girlfriend, Francine.
Right.
She was blackmailed by Boucher and Dominguez for narcotics information after they took new photos of her and threatened to post them all over her kid's school.
So when she finally fesses up and gives him a phone number, am I skipping a bunch here?
No. You're right on target.
Okay, so when it finally fesses up, this was the first movie that I can remember that really taught us that we could track somebody through a cell phone.
Right.
Yeah, that cell phones have GPS on them.
That was interesting. That was like ahead of its time for 90s technology, especially when you look at the grid of it and things like that, too. It's like the first time that we actually got introduced to GPS in the 90s. And it looks like an 80s video game, the way that they have
it. It really does. It looks like the old Star Wars. You know, are we doing this on DOS still? You know, yeah, I it was weird. It was like, you know, the precursor to Life 360, you know. And if your wife wants to put Life 360 on your phone, pass. But I think it was the first movie that I can remember. I'm a very avid movie watcher. That GPS was used to track because you know they call them, they say, "Hey, it's me, Romeo." There's no Romeo here, you know, and then they got him, you know, so they can find where they're going.
Right. What do you think the other two detectives, the other two buddy cops?
Yeah.
What do you think of them?
I thought they're cast very well. If you watch shows like Narcos and watch shows like, I thought that they were put there to give it some authenticity for being in Miami, I think, because like in the beginning when they're all standing around the place where, you know, in the property room where the drugs were stolen at, and they're like, take somebody have a lot of guts to do this. And he's like, yeah, cojones too. And he's like, what the hell are you talking about, cojones? He's like, it would take me a month to explain. You live in Miami, you don't know what cojones means, you know. I thought that they were good. Those two actors have been in some stuff since then, been in quite a few things, typically when they need a Hispanic role filled. I thought they were the perfect blend. If you look in the second one, they're two different actors, but same kind of parts. Not so much in the third one, because now you're dealing with cops that are older, you know, and it was more of the younger crew coming in and the older crew. I can't wait to see how the dynamic between everything in the fourth one, based on the trailer, which I'm sure you've watched. I to answer your question, I thought that they were, it would be less of a movie without them, because you need that conflict, you know, and
it is, you need another two detectives who have like a buddy cop kind of flavor.
Yeah.
Besides Martin Lawrence. And I would like to see a spinoff thing just for them to be
sure. Oh, have you ever seen the movie The Other Guys?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of like, you know, the Samuel Jackson and The Rock kind of, I mean, the contrast. I'm not saying that they're like that, but the contrast between the two. But at the end, when they're like, hey, look, there's going to be, you know, some stuff going down that could get you killed, they were up for it. They were ready to go. Yeah, because they understood that they're all on the same team. Sleepy saying more Spanish people in the fourth one.
I agree. I you know what? They definitely do need more Spanish or Cuban people.
It's Miami. It's yep. Miami. Yeah.
You need to have that vibe if you're doing a Miami.
Sure.
But yeah. So organize a plan to stop the criminals, Sanchez and Rose, from killing Julie and selling the drugs. A final shootout erupts between the group of cops and the drug dealers at Opa Loca Executive Airport. Marcus is shot in the leg after saving Julie from Fauché, but manages to kill Casper by shooting some nearby barrels of either which blow up Casper and some nearby thugs. After Mike kills Ferguson, he attempts to catch Fauché and shoot Mike while escaping the building, which is now on fire. But he is rescued by Marcus and Julie, who left to get Mike's car. So that action sequence, I thought it was really neat. You have the chemist there, you have Fauché there, you have a lot of setup there where you have the money briefcase, you have your typical showdown for the climax.
Yeah, comment just came in. That's a great, I don't know about the yeah. best one-liner in the movie, but I mean, there's quite a few, but it's certainly one of the more famous ones. It was put on the original trailer. I would raise you one where that Mike Lowry says when he finally gets in the car and they're chasing after Fauché. Marcus, how the hell are you going to leave a gunfight to go get the car?
Right. I love that. Because what the hell are you going to leave a gunfight to get a car?
You know,
and then
that gunshot wound must have done something to prove your driving skills.
Now on, that's how you're supposed to drive. Now on, drive like.
You know what? We forgot one of the greatest conversations in the movie towards the very beginning when they're riding in the car, and he's like, you know what? You drive almost slow enough to drive Miss Stacy. You know, he's like, you driving like a bitch. And I'll take me and you off this cliff. You know, where we going to be then? Two bitches in the sea. Yeah, what a great conversation. That was paraphrasing, of course. There's a lot more to it.
Right. But yeah, I love that. And of course, now you actually get to know how Marcus drives and now how Marcus now drives.
Right.
Everything that's going on.
But
the stunts was really good for this as well. And he also said, at least you didn't get shot in the ass. And then I thought to myself, that's a call to the second movie.
Yeah.
Second one. Because he does get shot in the ass over the KKK clan.
He does. And if you think about it, at the very end when the wife calls Marcus and Mike Lowry says to him, man, you got shot in the leg, your dick probably don't even work. And then in the second one, when he gets shot in the ass, and then his wife's like, he's having other trouble, you know, and just the callback between the movies, you know, is perfect. You know,
I agree. I definitely agree. So after all that happens, Marcus, Mike, and Julie chase for Chase Shelby Cobra AC 427 and Mike's Porsche 911 Turbo. I love this B chase between them.
Marcus, two beautiful cars, by the way. Two beautiful cars.
Be honest with you, the Shelby Cobra is actually my dream car. And the Porsche is also my dream car as well. Marcus bumps Fauché into a concrete barrier, but he manages to escape the wreckage. But I like how he's reading him to his Aranda rights. He has your right to remain silent. Anything that you said will be against you in a court of law. And then Mike's going, what the fuck are you doing?
Because getting it out the way.
I love it. I love that part.
Yeah. To where, like I said, it's very Marcus-centric, to where he's kind of turned and you know, it takes a lot to piss off Marcus Burnett. But when you do, you know, and that's, it's kind of like, you know, looking like when, because think about it, throughout the franchise, whenever Mike is in trouble, Marcus is trying to get away from almost seemingly the entire franchise. But when Mike's in trouble, Marcus is always there.
Exactly. There all the time, always got his bag. Then knowing he is beaten, tries to Mike into killing him, which he almost does as revenge for Max's murder until Marcus prevents it. While on the ground, Fauché then pulls out a concealed weapon and aims at Marcus, but seeing the reflection on his partner's forehead, Mike spins and shoots Fauché numerous times, killing him. And I like how you have the reflection of the sun reflecting off the gun whenever that his partner's about to die. And also, too, Marcus is also telling, look, man, it's not worth it. It's not worth killing him. I kill him. And Fauché just still wanting to kill one of them, at least.
I love the cinematography of that scene when he brings out the gun and it's that four-barreled little shooter, you know, and you're just like, you don't see one of those every day, you know, and you see the, you know, go across Marcus's face and Mike look down. And I love the sound editor of the movie, who there's a lot of people outside of the actors of this movie that deserve to win something, and I'll get to that in a second. But the sound editor, after he shoots Fauché and you're looking at the intense, you know, look on Mike's face, it cuts to the kind of shocked look on Marcus's face, you know, and then you just hear, I love you, man. Yeah, I thought that was perfect, you know, to where he was just like, you just saved my life. I love you, man. So the cinematography of that shot, because I've watched a lot of movies to this caliber that you wait until the end and they screw it up. You know, I don't think that they did with this movie, you know, at all. I mean, we could pick it apart, you know, left and right, but I think as an entertainment value, as a cinematography value, or of that shot, I just, it's one of my favorite
cinematography shots. Really good. I'm gonna say
very good. Yeah, you know, Michael Bay, I think he's proved that he knows what he's doing on that. You know, my problem with Michael Bay movies is they typically lack in story. You know, yeah. but in quality, they don't. I mean, they're always going to be entertaining because he's going to blow some shit up.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, you know.
And know what you're getting when you get a Michael Bay movie. You know,
sure.
Turn your brain off for 2.5 hours and just a popcorn in your face.
That's, you might have to deal with Shia LaBeouf. That's fine, you know. I mean,
Megan Fox.
Yeah, but, well, that's actually preferred, you know. Right. But, you know, I mean, if anybody were to come to me and say the Transformer movies are better than the Bad Boys movies, me and them are going to have a discussion.
I love the Bad Boys movies because of the fact that Michael Bay knows what he's doing with these characters, and he's good at original work versus something that's been adaptations of Transformers or TMNT producing those.
Right.
He's good at originality.
Sure.
But when it comes down to other big franchises, he needs to leave those alone. His focus on original films.
Sure.
Let's see here. Sleevy says, we ride together, we die.
We die.
Bad Boys for Life. Even though that was in the second movie.
A lot of iconic. I know we're talking about the original here, but I think the original is the funniest movie. if you wanted to go, which one is a better action movie? It's probably the second one. It's just got a different dynamic to it, but they didn't try to do too much with it. But it's also like, if you were to say, what's the iconic funny part of the first movie? I would say the very first scene, or the scene in the convenience store to where, the freeze mother bitches, you freeze bitch. It says, put your gun down, step back, put your gun down, give me a pack of juicy fruit, Bubblicious, yeah, and some Skittles. Either that scene or that scene. And then the one in the second one is when they're interrogating Reggie. I think everybody loves that scene. If you were to YouTube Bad Boys 2, I guarantee you that comes up, which was totally ad-libbed. So Fouché shot.
Right. So later, after Marcus and Mike professes their brotherly love for one another, relief in surviving
the that game. Line, I have a story about that line.
Okay.
So Will Smith didn't want to do that line. He didn't think that the Mike Lowry's character would ever tell anybody that he loved him. And so Michael Bay said, look, say what you want. It got mad at him. Say what you want. We're losing light. Because that shot is in the sunset. Because we're losing light.
Sunset is a perfect way to end it on a high note after a big gunfight. And I understand where he's saying, where he's like, he doesn't think that Mike Lowry would actually tell anyone that he loved him. But at the same time, you're not telling a woman that you love them. You're telling your best friend that you love them. And you will tell your best friend that you love them, even if it's just between the two of you and it's not outspoken between anyone but you two. So I understand where Michael Bay is actually saying, because that's actually part of who Mike is. He's not going to tell a woman that he loves them because he's a player.
Right. And yeah, he didn't want to have a beef with Michael Bay, so he just went ahead and said it. That was the story. They're doing all kinds of interviews now with the fourth one coming out and stuff like that. So, people like me who send in, want to talk about, a movie that came out almost 30 years ago, which in my opinion is the best one. In my opinion. Yeah.
So after that happens, Marcus handcuffs Julie and Mike's hands together and hobbles away, hoping for some much needed quality time with his wife so he could be with her and his actions. And I like how basically, man, your dick probably don't even work.
Yeah, you get shot in the leg. Your dick probably don't even work. Yeah. Oh, you want Mike Lowry? There you go.
There you go.
Mike Lowry.
I'm going to go home and get my quality time.
Go home and get my quality time. My wife beat me 3 times while I'm out here. Beeped her. For those of you who don't know, in the 90s, we had beepers.
Yep. We had beepers, no cell phones, no texting, just beepers.
It was beautiful. No one could get in contact with you. If they wanted to call it, you had to be at home. There is a freedom to not having a cell phone, people. And I thought, we all think that they're cool, and now we're all geniuses because we can Google things, and stuff like that. But there was a certain amount of freedom to not having a cell phone.
Totally agree with you on that. I had a beeper when I was like 14 or 15, and I thought that was the greatest thing. I had like a little clip. I thought it was big stuff because I had a beeper. But yeah.
Yeah, my parents gave me a beeper because I stayed out all night one night. Because I don't know if you would believe this, but I have trouble sometimes following the rules.
No.
Sometimes. and they gave me a beeper, and my dad was like, if you don't call me back within 5 minutes of me paging you, you're going to wish you did. And I never tested him on that because my dad didn't really mess around.
My mom never messed around. Put it that way. My mom was a hard ass. So my dad, on the other hand, was more laid back and stuff like that too. But yeah, now that we stripped away the nostalgia, now that we talked about it scene by scene, what's your rating?
Okay, so I got to look at this on a couple of different levels, okay? Like, personal rating, it's going to be very high. Entertainment value, it is very high. But are there movie mistakes? Absolutely. Are there cliches? Ton of them, you know, in the buddy cop movie. So I'm kind of like, when it comes to movies, I don't give a total movie rating of a 10. I don't think there's a perfect movie out there. I'm kind of like Dave Portnoy with pizza ratings, you know? So, I would give this an 8.2 on the Keb scale of movie ratings, with Empire Strikes Back being 9.9.
For me, I'm going to go, I believe I gave it like a 8.5, I think, whenever I started out with it. So I'm going to go with at least an 8 out of 10 for this.
Gotcha.
So straight up 8. And I love this movie. This is hands down one of my favorite ones. I do not know if it's available to stream anywhere or anything like that, but I own the Blu-ray of all three films. But, you know, guys, go on ahead, check out where you guys can stream it from.
I'm pretty sure the first two are on Netflix.
Okay, so...
I mean, it may or may... It's either Netflix or Amazon. It's one of the two. I'm not sure about the third one. I think that's on Stars somewhere, you know, like that. To tell you the truth, I've only seen the third one twice. Yeah, I've seen the first two probably 50 times each.
Same here. To be honest with you, the third one, now that you're thinking about it, I've only seen it maybe twice. I saw it once in theaters, and then once it came on Blu-ray.
Yeah, it seemed like the third one tried to get a little too serious. You know, with Lowry getting shot and all that good stuff. But, and then they, you know, I don't know if we want to, you know, spoiler alert. Huh?
We'll get, how about this? Yeah. They'll do a rewatch review of those other two films later on. So.
Cool.
The fourth one's coming out, and I know that we're gonna go see it. But anyways, Kev, my question for you is, do you have anything coming out as far as your podcast goes with the Stupid History Minute or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, we're plugging along daily on the Stupid History Minute. We do have sale going on right now at stupidhistory.net on the Stupid History book for Father's Day. It's almost the, you know, perfect gift for a father. If you think the Stupid History Minute is dumb, well, then you should immortalize it in a book, because it's just as dumb, just longer, you know. And we're getting some. What's funny is they're selling more now than they were at Christmas, which is
fun. Awesome.
They've been out longer. It's been out longer, so it's, you heard me say, but I haven't been hammering it down people's throats like I was when it came out. But yeah, it's there. And it's a perfect Father's Day gift. It's not Pulitzer Prize material, you know. It's developed to go in the back of your toilet, you know, and I think every toilet in America should have it on there. Mine's on there. You know what? I should take a picture
of have your book on the back of my toilet.
Yeah, thanks. And I just think it should be on the back of the toilet in the White House. You know, I mean, that's, you know what? I wonder if I sent one to the White House, would they accept it? I don't know. But the Stupid History Minute right now, I've been doing the Stupid History Minute. We have almost 700 episodes, and I've been doing it for 3 years. And this month, I have gotten more nice, you know, messages about 1 minute episodes, because we're doing video games. And I did not realize how passionate of a group video gamers are.
They are.
I'm the father of two of them, you know, and like, they helped me write these, you know. Now I didn't need help writing Centipede and Galaga. That's, you know, when I was a kid, Pong, Zork, Oregon Trail, you know, things like that. But like, today's episode was World of Warcraft. You know, I will go on saying I've never spent 1 minute playing World of Warcraft, but my son loves it. You know, I've never spent 1 minute playing a game called Minecraft. You know,
I haven't either.
But I pay for it because my kids love it. You know, and and things of that nature. So it was a good blend. And to do this, when we, my son was like, you should do an order. And I said, no, we picked out of a hat of which would go on which day. And so that's why you have, like, today you have World of Warcraft, tomorrow you, I think it's Super Mario Brothers, you know.
Like it.
And,
I like that.
Yeah, and so, but I have never gotten more, I'm talking hundreds of messages, you know. I mean, usually it's, usually the messages that I get are when I say something stupid on Unfiltered Sports Weekly. That's usually the messages that I get. And I give people my at, because I don't want them sending, say, Jared Beebs, you know, anything. But, yeah, so that's what we got going on. We got a really good series coming out in June and July to get us kind of through up until fall. Still stupid everyday items, you know, and topics. So it's not going anywhere. Yeah, we're if you got topics, stupidhistory.net, plug it in, space right there. And, yeah, sooner or later we'll get around to doing movies. But, yeah, it's still there at Filtered Sports Weekly. If you're a sports fan, you can come in. I mean, we talk about sports sometimes. Usually it's just us making fun of each other.
That's okay. I'll listen to that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, usually it's just, yeah, but we're live every Tuesday night. And then, yeah, the audio version comes out the very next day. So, on Wednesdays. And we've been doing that for the three of us together, probably all the iterations for, you know, it's close to 3 years now. So, but yeah, that's where what we got going on.
Okay, well, guys, that's going to be as far as the show goes. On Tuesday, I will have Pick the Flick podcast with me. We are going to be doing our playlist of Queen. So we're going to be doing a Queen playlist. Basically, what we're going to do is like a mixtape playlist. So, guys, go on ahead, check that out on Tuesday night, 8 o'clock Central Time, 9 o'clock Eastern Time. This will be a live event, and then we'll, and a couple of days later, we'll be out on the audio format. And after that, next weekend, I'll also have another guest on. This is actually his first time being on here. And we're going to be reviewing True Lies with Schwarzenegger. So we're going to be breaking that movie down scene by scene next Saturday, 8 o'clock Central Time, 9 o'clock Eastern Time. That's going to be it as far as everything happening here at Movie Lovers Tonight. Also, too, check out Rossi's podcast called Rossi's Clubhouse. She has an awesome guest and stuff like that from the Sacramento area. She's interviewing another talented indie rapper tomorrow night at 9 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time, and that's going to be 7 o'clock p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And don't forget to visit Unfiltered Studios. Go ahead and get your pills of support with her. She does a fantastic podcast. Get your Hypno on with Hypno Wellness. Also, too, check out the Sleepy G Show. Does a good job at interviewing people, and check out many more that we have here at Unfiltered Studios. We are growing over here, and Kip is doing a fantastic job at finding talent. Just because he hosts a Stupid History Minute does not mean doesn't have any talent. He's great at finding people. He actually found us. So thank you so much.
Yeah, we love having you.
Love doing what we're doing. Also, to follow The Beep. The Beep will go on ahead. He has a great podcast as well. So go on ahead, check out all those podcasts that I mentioned. And always until next time, guys. Have a great day.
Growing businesses and finance professionals, you need Bill, Spend, and Expense, the free-to-use spend management software. It's powered by the Bill Divvy Corporate Card, which helps growing companies scale with credit lines of $500 to $15 million, automated expense reports, and as many virtual cards as you need. For a limited time, get $500 when you get started with Bill, Spend, and Expense. Request a demo at bill.com/get500. Terms and conditions apply. Advertised credit ranges are not guaranteed and are determined at approval. Card issued by Cross River Bank, member FDIC.